This is Jennifer Hunt with Caroline Naylor on the 7th of May 2014 at the Royal Voluntary Service Archive and Heritage Collection in Devizes, Wiltshire. So, Caroline, would you like to start telling me a little bit about yourself?
What, my WRVS self,
yes,
you mean?
Yes, and your personal sort of life outside. Introduce okay. Who you are.
Okay, well, I come from Yorkshire and I was married and had three sons. And decided that I really wanted to do something one day a week, scoured the local papers and saw an advertisement for someone who was interested in hospitals and could drive and was willing to work one day a week. It didn't mention charity or WRVS or anything. So I rang up and I spoke to somebody, and it wasn't until she sort of had explained it and so on, and she said, "Oh, and we are the WRVS." And I said, "Who's that?" And that was how it all started with them. And the year before, I'd become a magistrate. So I've now been a magistrate for 25 years. I'm still doing that. So with sitting in court on a Thursday, this job for WRVS was on a Monday. So I thought that would work really well and fit in with the family. And I got paid for it. So I got an honorarium of £8 a week. So that's how it all started.
And so you've told me about your reasons for when you're looking for something to do. Did you know anything about the organisation before you started?
I didn't even know it existed, which seems amazing. But I'd never heard of it at all. But I went down for the interview, and the lady who interviewed me was called Elizabeth Cowley, and it was at the area office in Leeds, and they just wanted somebody to go in, as I say, one day a week. And do a bit of paperwork. All of the hospitals had to send in returns. I'm not sure, I can't remember whether they were weekly returns or monthly returns. But they used to be piled up in my little inbox, and I would answer in about triplicate or quadruplicate on this old-fashioned typewriter. And a copy would get sent to head office, and a copy would go somewhere else, and we'd keep a copy, and a copy would go back to them. Oh, there were copies all over the place. And I would do that on one of the Mondays, and then the following Monday I would go out to visit one of the hospitals around in our sort of area. So it was an area sort of appointment as opposed to a more local sort of project. So if you like, I sort of went in at the middle level, and that was, say, how it all sort of started.
And can you describe sort of your first day as a hospital organiser?
Well, I can't honestly remember, but the first day, apart from the fact that it was like all WRVS offices, it was pretty old and dilapidated. Because it was an area office, we had one side of in a room, and then at the other side was the actual Leeds office, which ran the local sort of Leeds projects as well. And I had a little desk at one side with, I'll say, a very old typewriter, a very old desk. And we used to take our own sandwiches in, and I think we worked from about 10 till 3. And there was a secretary called Audrey, and then there was Elizabeth Cowley, who had interviewed me, and myself, and that was the three of us who were there.
And do you have any other memories of when you first became an organiser?
Well, of doing that role, I mean, it was very interesting. I enjoyed it because I used to go around all the different hospitals in the Yorkshire area, and of course we had quite a lot. And it was the tea bars that were in the hospitals that I was visiting. Because we were just getting to the stage of being more conscious about health and safety and food hygiene. And one of my jobs, which made me not very popular, was to stop people from bringing their own food in to make the sandwiches. And in one of the hospitals, we had a wonderful elderly lady called Gladys. I can't remember her surname. But Gladys would bring in, she was the project manager, she would bring in 2 dozen hard-boiled eggs every morning that she'd boiled at home the night before to make the sandwiches with, to sell to people. I mean, no training on hygiene or anything like that, and it hadn't mattered. You know, it's not that they were doing anything illegal, that's just how the projects ran. We used to make sandwiches. And then I had to tell them that really they shouldn't be using wooden chopping boards, which didn't go down very well. So all the wooden chopping boards had to go, and they had to get like these white plasticky ones. And then a bit later on, they weren't allowed to do any washing up themselves either. We had to have dishwashers because they weren't allowed tea towels. Someone else used to take the tea towels home and wash those every night and bring them back the next day. I mean, it was a real voluntary sort of job, you know, and everybody loved it. All the volunteers were very happy. And this was not just in one hospital. I mean, this was all the hospital projects, all the local tea bars. So I had to sort of check up on that sort of thing. And also on signage, because people would just write on a piece of cardboard, you know, T1 and 6, or well, we had gone decimal actually by then, so it's probably T30p or and coffee 40p, and it would be stuck up with a piece of blue tack on the side of the shop. And as WRVS was progressing and becoming that little bit more professional, they didn't want those sort of signs. They wanted proper printed signs and so on. So again, I was the person who sort of had to go in and say to them, well, you'll have to take that notice down. You know, it has to be laminated. Or we started then getting from head office proper printed signs and notices. And that would be my job to sort of take them round to the hospitals and make sure that they were up. So if I was going, I think there was sort of a bit of a dread, you know, amongst them. Oh, Lord, this woman's coming again. We're probably going to hide the tea towels and this sort of thing. But that was really how WRVS operated within the hospitals anyway. And, of course, we did give a lot of money to the hospitals with our grants. And that's what the volunteers were there for. That's what they really enjoyed, the fact that the money that was raised was going back to the hospital. It was before the days of paying rent to the hospitals. We would gift things, and I'm sure in the archive there's loads of photographs of us giving gifts of things to the hospitals. And that's what WRVS was all about in those days.
And so between sort of when you started in 1990 and sort of then 1994 when you became a volunteer trainer, how did your role as a hospital organiser change?
Well, the role of the hospital organiser, they decided quite rightly that I couldn't possibly do it as a volunteer for sort of 4 or 5 hours once a week, that it was getting a bit more serious now. They were wanted to pay somebody to have a full-time job to do that. So that job sort of disappeared. But at the same time, whoever was sort of in charge, I can't think of who it might have been, but someone from head office decided that we really ought to be doing some training of these volunteers, because there were the new sort of hygiene rules coming in and so on. And I sort of said, oh, well, I would don't mind, you know, I'd never had any training experience, but I said I wouldn't mind sort of starting doing a little bit of training in our area. And they appointed training managers. So the one who was appointed for the Northeast was called Brian King, and I sort of became his assistant. So my role as area hospital organiser finished, but my role as a volunteer trainer, just helping out Brian, started. And it was around that time that, because I'd worked in an area office, people coming in from like the division, sort of the whole of the division, I'd met them, so they'd sort of got to know me because they were coming to the area office. And that was when it was first mentioned that would I like to become a company member. And I said, you know, what's a company member? And the role of a company member was really someone who didn't actually do anything particular, but was like the eyes and the ears and the representative of volunteers. So there were think there were five or six of us in Yorkshire as company members, and we could go to any meetings that we wanted to do with the paid staff, and it was handy because they met at the area office in Leeds, and of course I was based there, and so I would sit in on the meetings with the hospital organiser and the emergency services organiser and the, you know, the county organiser and when they had their meetings, and I would just sit there, and so I would know what was going on within the organisation, mm-hmm. and I could sort of, I was usually given a little slot to, in case there was anything that I wanted to say about how volunteers felt about certain things, so mm-hmm. so I could sort of say if they were going to introduce something, well, I'm not sure how, you know, as a volunteer, I don't quite know how that would go down. So it was the beginning, really, of starting to get some feedback, if you like, from volunteers, now that certain people were beginning to be paid, because of course originally, as you well know, mm-hmm. I mean, nobody was paid, were they? And then there was this feeling quite strong about the volunteers, who didn't see why they should be volunteering for nothing when so-and-so, who was an area manager, was being paid. I mean, they weren't paid a lot, but it was just this sort of beginning of the WRVS moving from a purely voluntary organisation mm-hmm. to an organisation where certain people had to be paid in order to get the right sort of calibre of person. And that's when it all, if you like, became a bit more serious, I suppose, in that then you started with your training mm-hmm. And being more answerable sort of to people. And then we had all this fun about bank accounts and things where I think we had over 3,000 bank accounts. I mean, Matthew will probably know. But that everyone would pay the money in from their project. But nobody actually knew how many projects were out there. Yeah. And it was, Jerry Burton was just amazed by the fact that we'd got all these projects and everyone was working wonderfully well in its own little way, but there wasn't anyone who actually knew how many projects were out there mm-hmm. and so that was a huge piece of work, but that I mean, I'm sort of jumping the gun a little bit there, because that happened over a long period of time, sorting out them all that, but we had people from the projects who would walk to the bank with all the week's takings in the handbag and just walk to pay it in. Well, nobody thought any more about it. No. But and the more things you sort of talked about and learned about, that the more horrified certain people were and thought, well, we're going to have to try and change all this. So the role of the company member, if you like, was to act as a sort of liaison. And we had one meeting a year where we went to the AGM, which was held in London, and all the company members would go, and I don't know, there were probably about 30 of us over the whole country. As I say, there were about five in Yorkshire. And we could go to the AGM, but we couldn't actually say anything or do anything or vote about anything at all. And I can remember us all sort of having a get-together and a chat, and we sort of said, well, this doesn't seem right. It doesn't seem right. What, you know, if we don't have a say or a vote, what's the point of having company members? And so that was when they started taking a bit more sort of notice of company members. And it was the era then where we'd got Tina Teachin, who'd started, and Jerry. It was decided then that perhaps we ought to make the company members into more, make it a more sort of, what's the word I'm looking for? Recognised sort of thing, or make it more of a proper part of WRVS. And it was about that time that Alice became vice chairman, and so it was decided that we would form a little group of maybe two or three company members from around the whole country, and Alice, who was vice chairman, and Tina, and we would get a group of some, and I can't remember who they were, I don't know whether Alice can remember, but we would form a proper group, and we would all be volunteers, because a company member could be somebody who had some small honorarium in the past. But if we were going to make this group of people to represent the volunteers in WRVS, then obviously nobody was supposed to be paid. So that's when the vice chairman's committee was formed. So it took at least a year to transfer sort of from company members to vice chairman committee members. But we had some very interesting meetings and thrashed out sort of what we were going to do and so on. I was one of the working party on that group. And so that's how the vice chairman's committee was formed. And I say Alice was our chairman, obviously. And we had probably about 20, 25 members, but throughout the whole country. And we would, by then we'd started with emails and things like that, computers. So we could keep in touch that way, which was good. And we had probably 2 or maybe 3 meetings every year where we would get together. And we'd also got Milton Hill by then, which was really good. So I was part of the vice chairman's committee, and they were all volunteers. So they might be a project manager from, you know, a hospital shop or an emergency services person. And I was still doing my volunteer training. So I was actually doing the two. That was what my volunteering was within WRVS. Was going around doing the training. So I actually moved a lot between projects, which was quite good still, and travelled around quite a lot. And say by then we were doing little training courses. I mean, when I look back on them now, I suppose they were very sort of unprofessional sort of things, but it was better than nothing. And we put all the volunteers who worked in hospital shops through health and safety sort of things and food safety courses. And then, because a lot of the volunteers weren't very happy with all the changes that were going on, and there were huge changes going on in the 90s, we did a little training course on managing change and various things. So that kept me really busy. I went on a Train the Trainers course so that I knew what I was doing. And that's when I met Val and all the other training managers, because by then they'd set up a training department, which WRVS never had. And Mark Lever was in charge of training. So when I first met Mark, he was the training manager. And Val lived in Manchester, so she was doing the north-west of the country as a training manager. And Brian King was doing the north-east, and I was his assistant. So I then got involved in the training side, and although I was a volunteer and not being paid, I went to all the training meetings then down at Milton Hill, because I was obviously involved with the training. And Mark decided that we should all do an NVQ, so we embarked on this NVQ. So we had quite a lot of fun doing that. But we did manage, most of us managed to get through. This took about 2 years or so, but I did get an NVQ in training, and so that was, so I was then doing the volunteering, that, you know, the vice chairman's committee and also the training side. So that's, you know, that was that up to now. I don't know if
you've quite a few different roles.
Oh, well, I had. I mean, I loved it. It was, it kept me. So it was a full-time job for which I wasn't being paid a penny. And then it was decided that because Brian was only wanting to work 2 or 3 days a week because he was getting near retirement age, they asked me if I would work the other 2 days on a paid basis. So I said, well, yeah, I was doing it anyway for nothing. If they were going to pay me a small amount, then I was going to be a training manager sort of along with Mark, then that was fine. So I did that, and I did get paid for, I think it was about 6 months. And I got a mobile phone, and I felt quite, you know, I got a computer at home because I was you know, proper training manager as opposed to just helping Brian. So that was my sort of very small part of actually doing something in WRVS that I was paid for, which was quite a contrast to everything else. But then my time in the vice chairman's committee was coming to an end, because we decided when we were setting it up that you could only do 6 years, that you could do 3 years and then another three if you were voted to stay on. But they needed another trustee. So I sent my CV in, sort of as a volunteer, someone from the volunteer side of the organisation, because obviously that was what they needed at the time, because you had to have people who knew what they were doing, you know, finance people or marketing people and this sort of thing. But also it was felt that it was important to have volunteers on the trustee board as well. So that was, I then became a trustee, so I had to stop being paid. So it was very short and sweet, my paid employment with WRVS. And I said, well, I'd still like to keep on doing the training, because that was what I enjoyed doing. And so that was what I did, the training, and then a board member. So I'd then sat on the board for 3 years, I think. And that was when Alice was doing her second lot of 3 years as vice chairman, and it was decided then that Tina said, would Val and I be prepared to take over from Alice? So for my last 3 years on the board, I was vice chairman along with Alice. So it, you know, it sort of all followed a course along.
So looking at when you were a company member, and Jerry Burton was chief executive at the time. What were your opinions on him being a chief executive being introduced to the organisation?
I didn't really have an awful lot of involvement with that then, because, as I say, as company members, we could see things, hear things, and so on, but we were fairly powerless to do anything. I didn't have any particular strong feelings about it at all. But I know that the fact that he was a man to start with, a lot of people found quite hard. But because we'd still got a female chairman, then I think he was sort of accepted fairly gradually, probably, by a lot of people. But I think it was my own sort of views, I think, were that as long as he was right for the organisation, didn't really matter whether it was male or female. But it had up to then been a very female organisation. And although we had the odd, well, when I say odd man, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't mean odd as in odd, but odd as in few and far between. There were men in the organisation, but they had to be a certain sort of man who didn't feel really outnumbered, you know, by the fact that it was still known as a woman's organisation, really. And we did have quite a lot of talk at boardroom level about whether we should drop the W, because were we stopping men from applying to be volunteers because it was seen purely as a woman's organisation? So perhaps the fact that Jerry was one of the first men to come on board, perhaps it was a good thing. I mean, there were similar feelings about Mark Lever too. I mean, as training manager, that was one thing. But then when it was sort of seen that he was going to be a chief exec after that, I suppose people had got more used to Jerry, but they thought, oh, now what's going to be next? You know, we're going to have a male chairman. And, of course, we have now, haven't we, with Richard. I've never met him, but I'm sure he's doing a good job.
He's very nice. Yeah, I've met him.
I mean, it's the right. It's getting the actual right person, isn't it? And I think we've finally got away, probably in this organisation now, from thinking that it is just a women's organisation. I'd like to think so, anyway.
And with the decisions Jerry made in sort of the 90s about it, because when he had to turn it really into a charity, instead of a crown service. How did you feel about those changes that he made?
I think they had to be. As I touched on earlier, the fact that we were trying to do so many things, so many different things. I mean, we had the clothing stores, and we had shops in prisons and tea bars and psychiatric hospitals, and we were spread so wide. We did blood sort of the blood donoring sort of things in Scarborough and Filey in Yorkshire, and everywhere you went there were the clothing stores, and there was so much that if someone said to you, if you were trying to sell flags on the street for WRVS and someone said, what do you do? You'd have to say, well, here's a chair. Can you sit down? It'll take me half an hour to tell you. And if you were going to become a charity, as we had to do in order to survive, really, we had to actually understand what we were doing better. And we had to, I don't like this expression, but get our heads round what we were good at and what we could give up. And that was a huge piece of work to do, really. And it was a very difficult thing to do, telling people who had volunteered for years in a specific project that we were actually going to close the project. But it was the same sort of thing with the money and the bank accounts, that everything worked wonderfully well. But there was just, we were just too diverse, really. Mm-hmm. We had to cut down, and we had to decide on what was going to be the most important bits that we wanted to keep going. And we also had to think of a revenue, what made us money. So we had to sit down and look at the things that didn't pay or that actually cost us money, and the things that actually made us a bit of money. And then the hospitals at that same time started to want rent, which was a big thing, and the volunteers were not happy about that at all. I don't think anybody was particularly. They liked the fact that we could choose to give them money for a specific thing, not money to just actually be on the site. I mean, that seemed to go against a lot of what WRVS was all about. But again, things became so much more commercialised that it needed some good brains behind it, which is why you had to get people like Jerry Burton and Tina Teachern, and you had to get people on the ground as well who actually knew what they were doing and were prepared to work full-time, sort of, and they had to be paid for that. So there was a huge switch from becoming purely a voluntary organisation to becoming something that was sort of viable for the 1990s. So I don't think Jerry Burton was particularly popular amongst the volunteers, but I think because people didn't like change and wanted things just to stay as they were, and all he did was change things. But when you knew the full picture and you knew the full story, it made it a little bit easier. And he did try to have meetings with volunteers, meetings around the country. I mean, we did what we called roadshows to go round to try and explain to people. But I mean, a lot of the volunteers didn't bother going. They grumbled about how things were, but they weren't prepared to come and sort of listen to find out. In a lot of cases, I mean, some people were, but it was such a huge transition. In that time, it was quite a momentous time, really. So that was that.
Yes. And did he? Were there any other changes or decisions made about the organisation while you were a company member?
I don't think whilst I was there must have been lots of things went on while I was a company member, but I wasn't a company member for all that long. Maybe a couple of 2 or 3 years, and then, as I say, we became the vice chairman's committee and so on. So a lot of the changes, and I would get confused in my mind if I tried to work out what changes happened while I was a company member and what changes happened further sort of down the line. But there certainly were, I say, huge changes, and to do with uniforms and cenotaph parades and all these sorts of things that the WRVS had been so always doing.
Yes.
You know.
You just mentioned cenotaph parades. What happened with those? How did they...
Well, I think that it was all a fact with everybody had to have uniforms and so on, and all of a sudden you were getting a culture where people didn't have uniforms anymore. Some people didn't want to buy them, and we became less of a uniformed organisation. But because, as I say, the average volunteer didn't have a uniform, but you could borrow them because you had to have a uniform to go down to the cenotaph and to do the parades, and then we got somebody on the, I think it was Sadie, who used to do the poppies, organise all the wreaths for everybody. So that was something, obviously, that, you know, I think we still do, don't we? That's quite a big part of the organisation.
And so when you went from being company member to being on the vice chairman's committee, and you've told me how that was set up with Alice and the other people who are on there, how influential was the vice chairman's committee in the organisation?
I think it made quite a difference, because for the first time ever, people were having to listen to the voice of the volunteer, if you like, and we were able to make our voice known through the trustees who were sort of representing the volunteers, and also because, of course, Alice was on the board and she was also the chairman of the vice chairman's committee, if you like. And we were able to get a lot more information about how the organisation ran, whereas as company members, we could go to meetings and so on, but we never saw particular papers about things. But as the vice chairman's committee, one of the things that we asked if it were possible to do would be to see a lot of the board papers, the trustees' papers and so on that had been discussed, so that we actually knew what was going on before it became public knowledge, so that we could influence in some small way perhaps how to broach certain things with the volunteers who we were in touch with. And also there was, because it was a sort of regularised, if that's the right word, committee, and we had representatives throughout the country who went to all their local things and so on, we could get feedback from all over that actually meant something, and that we would feedback to Alice, and that she could then take onto the board, and to say me and Val later on could do the same thing, because there was a lot of the vice chairman's committee, it was decided, but at board level as well, would present medals and things like that, because volunteers really preferred to get a medal from another volunteer than from Mrs. So-and-so, who's only been here half an hour, you know, and thinks she's the bee's knees and look at how much money she's getting paid sort of attitude, which is sort of what it was like with some of the older volunteers, and they didn't want their 15-year certificate from her, thank you very much, you know. So we could organise nice tea parties and things like that, which the volunteers enjoyed, and do medal presentations. But we could also use that as a means of giving a little chat to the volunteers as well, about why things were changing. Because generally speaking, if they knew why, they were a bit better about it. And very often I would get somebody coming up to me saying, I was really cross when I came to this meeting about so-and-so, but she said, now that you've told me, I sort of see why we're doing it. So, you know, so thank you. You still got the irate volunteers, you know, but again, it was good for them to have somebody who they could actually approach and say what they thought. And because we weren't paid, we had no fear about losing our jobs.
No.
Because, you know, that nobody could sack us. So people would talk to us, whereby they perhaps wouldn't talk to the paid employees. And we also got the paid paid employees talking to us about certain things they weren't happy with because they didn't mention it to their line manager. But could we do anything about it? Or could? And very often we could, because, as I say, we weren't frightened to speak up. And we had access to people who they didn't have access to. So it actually worked very well, I think, as a sort of circular method of getting information around the organisation. How are we doing?
Very well. And so then, after being on the Vice Chairman's Committee, you became a Vice Chairman. So did the committee still exist while you were
Vice-Chairman? Yes, the committee existed until after I'd left. It disbanded whilst Val was Vice Chairman. And the reasons behind that, I'm not sure. I think maybe it just outgrew itself and things changed again. But no, whilst Val and I were Vice Chairman, we were still in charge of the Vice Chairman's Committee. And we were both trainers, Val and I. She'd kept up her training, and I was still doing a little bit of training too. So we were able to train our committee, if you like. And we started with things like appraisals, because they had started within the organisation of paid people being appraised. And Val and I sort of said, well, we should sort of do littler sort of appraisals for the Vice Chairman's Committee and make people realise that we're, you know, committed to doing that sort of thing. So, yes, the Vice Chairman's Committee was pretty strong when Val and I were Vice Chairman. And for the AGM, which, of course, we held at Milton Hill when we had that wonderful facility, that all the Vice Chairman's Committee members were invited to come. So they met with all the board and we always had a very jolly evening together and so on. And it was good for them as well to come to head office, if you like. And we used to have our training sessions and our Vice Chairman meetings, which we had every sort of, well, twice a year anyway, sometimes three times a year. But we had those meetings at Milton Hill as well. So it was such a lovely place. We were so lucky to have that at that time. Because, of course, say Mark, he went over to be chief exec. So he left the training department and we got somebody called Alan Daniels who ran the training department. But it still went on in a similar sort of vein. Yeah, we were quite a strong organisation, you know, the Vice Chairman's Committee.
And who was the chairman during your time as a Vice Chairman?
Tina was. And then she left, I think, before I had a year left as Vice Chairman. And Ruth Markland took over then. So I got to know Ruth quite well as well. She was very different to Tina.
Mm-hmm. How were they different, Tina and Ruth?
Tina was a very get up and go, very positive, very let's do it sort of really upfront, sort of in your face sort of woman. And Ruth was a much calmer, much quieter, sort of a very different sort of personality. I think quite a lot of people were quite scared of Tina. She was that sort of a person. But I quite admired her because she didn't stand any nonsense and she ran the board meetings very efficiently and people knew that if they were giving a presentation to the board, you know, and they'd been given 20 minutes, by Jove, that's what they got, 20 minutes, you know. She was very punctual about everything. But she had fun as well. Yeah. You know, we had some fun as well because, of course, the board were all unpaid people and they were giving up. Some of the people were, you know, quite high powered and the time that I was there, you know, there was Ian Peacock and Dino Adriano and they gave up their time to come. So, you know, they wanted to enjoy it and feel that they were doing something useful. And again, that was why it was so nice to have Milton Hill, because it was so nice to be able to socialise there in the evening. And when you're working as a board and you only meet up sort of three or four times a year, you need to get a bit of a rapport going, not around the boardroom table. So that was, that worked quite well, except it worked against me in one part, because they got me one evening, Tina and Ian Peacock, and I ended up agreeing to go on the finance committee. And I said, but I don't know anything about finance. And Ian, who was an accountant, you know, he said, you don't need to know anything about finance. He said, we want someone who will ask stupid questions. Oh, well, I said, I'm your girl then. And such, that was how it was. It did work quite well, yeah. Because I didn't really understand figures that well. They had to sort of explain things to me, and you know, once or twice I would say, well, why, you know, or something, and it would make them look at things maybe a bit more carefully. So and there was always someone there to ask if I really didn't understand things. So yes, Ruth and Tina were very, very different, but both good for the organisation, mm-hmm. I think, and they were both very, very dedicated. As I say, Ruth was still going strong when I left. I went back to see her when she actually retired. She had a little lunch party in London, and I went to that to say goodbye to her. So now I really feel that, you know, I don't know what's going on in the organisation particularly, but things move on and people move on, and, you know, I'm sure it's in very good hands, and I get lots of gossip from Alice. Like we all do.
I can imagine.
Yes.
So also, was, you were saying, talking about Mark Lever, was he the chief executive while you were vice chairman?
Yes.
And how was he different from Jerry?
He was different from Jerry because he'd come up through the organisation, where Jerry had come into the organisation as chief exec, as far as I'm aware. But Mark had done quite a bit of volunteering, I think, with WRVS. And he'd been employed as a training manager, so he'd travelled around a lot as a training manager, and he'd got to know the organisation better than Jerry, I think. And so I think he was able to bring a different understanding, probably, to WRVS. He had been... what's the word, not coached, but Jerry and he had always got on quite well, and I think Jerry was quite fond of Mark, and I think he hoped that perhaps Mark would be able to take over from him. But of course, I mean, several people were interviewed, and there was a lot of talk about whether it would be better to get somebody who'd come in with fresh eyes, who knew nothing about WRVS, to be chief exec, or whether it would be better to have somebody who understood what we'd gone through and the pain, I suppose, if you like, of changing the organisation so much through the 90s, and all the things that, you know, that we had to do, and to try and make some sort of income. Mark seemed to, and he seemed to understand volunteers better. And he had a bit of an empathy with them. And I think the volunteers could sort of understand Mark better. So I think that's really what he brought to the role. The fact that he was more at one with the volunteers. So they were, so in that respect, they were different.
And did Mark make any changes to the organisation while he was a chief executive?
I think he and Tina, obviously between them, it seemed to be changing all the time, did the organisation. Who instigated a lot of the changes? I'm honestly not sure. But things obviously were changing all the time. I can remember saying to Tina, I'll be glad when all this change is finished. And she looked at me and she said, when that happens, she said, WRVS may as well pack up, because, you know, an organisation is always having to go through change. But there were huge changes with everything that had to go on. So I think Mark continued what Jerry had started, really. the cutting down on the projects, the making things more accountable, trying to sort of get an overall picture of the whole organisation and sort of moving it forward. And there was talk at one time of merging maybe with one of the other charities, mm-hmm. like I think it's Age UK now or
yes.
something like that.
The Age Concern.
That's right. And what was the other one? I can't think. Mm. It's on the tip of my tongue. But anyway, there were quite serious talks, and I think that was more when Mark and Tina were involved. But I think we were concerned that it perhaps wouldn't be so much of a merger as more of a takeover. And I don't think we felt that we were ready for that, that we wanted that, that we felt that we could carry on ourselves. But we still had the problem, and I think we probably still have, I don't know, but the problem of what we do. You know, when you go out on the street, if someone is raising money for Guide Dogs for the Blind, or you know exactly what that's for, or Oxfam, you know about Oxfam and the other bigger charities, Marie Curie and so on, you instantly know what, you don't have to explain, do you? But WRVS, or now of course RVS, I still think it's difficult for people to understand quite what we do. I think you still have to explain what we do. So people aren't going to recognise the charity as much as perhaps some of the other ones. I'm not saying that's not a reason for giving up or anything, but it makes it harder to raise money.
And were Mark and Tina and yourself involved with any of the changes in 2004, the rebranding of the organisation?
Yes, we were all involved. I was still involved with that, where we changed to the purple and the orange. Well, that went down like a bombshell with some of the volunteers, you can imagine. Mm-hmm. But we felt it was time to have a complete change, and a change of direction, and a change of plan. And I think it was the right thing to mm-hmm. do. I always remember we were at one do where it was probably the St James Palace one shortly after we'd rebranded. And the Duke of Edinburgh was going down the line, and he stopped at a volunteer one or two away from me anyway, and he peered at her badge and he said, just looks like a load of balls to me. I mean, you know, he comes out with classic comments. Well, of course, she burst out laughing, and that was quite amusing. A lot of the people who had the old badges were not terribly keen on the new ones, but then the badge that we'd had before, a lot of people hadn't liked that. I mean, as I've said, people don't like change particularly, but it was felt that we needed something that was more modern, and we needed a better strap line, and so yes, we had a rebranding company obviously to help us with that, which again the volunteers, and how much is that costing, you know. But volunteers would always say that, I suppose, wouldn't they? So, yes, though, that was sort of exciting times again. But then you would still go around the hospitals and some of the other projects, and they'd still have the old branding up. It took a long time to try and get it changed over. That, you know, and they were going, the company doing it, going around all the different places. Because I remember saying at one of the board meetings, it's very hard for a volunteer to feel they've been rebranded when they go into their project and they've still got all the old signage up. But it just wasn't possible to do everything all at the same time. So they did the key projects and the bigger projects first, and then sort of filtered it down. So it did take quite a long time. So I don't know how they're managing now with dropping the W off everywhere. But yes, that was one rebranding that I did live through, yes.
And you were working with Val Everett as mm-hmm. well at the time. How did you manage the role to get sharing the vice chairman?
It worked really, really well. Val and I are complete opposites, but we got on like a house on fire. So we still do. We still keep in touch. And she moved. She was in Manchester and I was in Yorkshire. But then she moved down to Bournemouth. So there was almost a natural division, if you like, which we agreed on. Tina did say to us, you know, I think it's too big a role for one person. Can you work out how you want to manage it? So we sat down and we thought, well, really, an invisible line across the country is by far the best way. So it was agreed that sort of Nottinghamshire sort of area, or Leicestershire, that sort of area, I would come down to that. So I would do everything above the line, Scotland as well.
Yeah.
And Val would do everything below the line, and the Channel Islands, because we were still involved with those. But we agreed that if ever, you know, we needed each other to do different things in different parts, then we would be interchangeable, if you like. And we were both given a car so that we could, because we were doing such a lot of driving around. I don't know how Alice ever managed it on her own, actually, because, as I say, it was a full-time. We both worked full-time. But so when I say worked, I mean we weren't paid, but... And then, of course, we did have emails. We were in constant touch with each other. We never made any sort of decisions, big decisions, without seeing each other. We had regular meetings, sort of halfway. We would drive and meet each other and chat about everything. And you know, Val had her little group of vice chairman committee members to look after, and I had my group as well. And we also had the volunteering manager for WRVS, who was in charge of all the volunteers. I'm damned if I can remember her name now. It's really annoying. I can picture her. But anyway, I won't waste time trying to think of her name. But because we were representing the volunteers, we had to work quite closely with her. So we would either come down to Milton Hill every 2 or 3 months and have a meeting with her, so that we knew whatever she was planning to do for the volunteers or with the volunteers throughout the whole country, that Val and I had an input in it. So again, we were very close to sort of the top paid people in or paid person in WRVS. And the three of us worked quite well together and made sure that we sort of gave a consistent message out across all the organisation.
And do you have any memorable moments of your time as a vice chairman that you particularly remember?
Any particular moments? Well, before I became vice chairman, one of my memorable moments for WRVS was being asked, when I was just a volunteer, so quite early on in my WRVS career, was to go to the Queen's Diamond wedding, which Tony Blair had organised, and there were three representatives from WRVS who had to be volunteers to go to this big lunch in Whitehall, and so that was a very memorable day for me. That was a super day, and I suppose another very memorable day when I was vice chairman was taking a group of my volunteers, picked from all over the country, actually, so they weren't particularly my volunteers, but to go to the Buckingham Palace garden party. And the volunteers were so thrilled to go, and we had such a lovely day. So that will always stand out as a special time. And at other times, it's more the sort of the fun and the friendship and the camaraderie that of everybody sort of working together and pulling together that will always stick in my mind. There were downsides, I suppose, like being stuck in awful traffic jams going to trying to get on the M1 down to Oxford or something like that. So, but nothing that particularly else that stands out.
And so in 2008, was that when you finished being a vice chair?
Yes.
And you decided to retire from the organisation?
Yes. I was very in two minds about it, because I could have done another 3 years. I'd actually done 6 years on the board, but because my vice chairman's role had come after 3 years, it was as though I could go on and do the 6 years as vice chairman. So I could have done the 9 years. But my husband had retired the previous year, and we'd also bought a house down in Norfolk. And I was just working so hard for the WRVS. And if I'd been on my own, I wouldn't have retired. I'd have done another 3 years. But because of, say, the at-home sort of situation and so on, not that my husband ever said, you know, I'd like you to give up or anything, but I felt it wasn't fair because I was away so much. And when he was working, it was all right because he was busy all day. But I thought, no, it's maybe not on, and that I felt the time was right. So, yes, I retired 3 years before I need have done. But Val carried on, and it was during that following 3 years, I think, when the Vice Chairman Committee was disbanded. We started to find it more difficult, just in my sort of last year or maybe even 2 years, of getting enough volunteers who were prepared to do it, actually, because it was quite a commitment, because they were expected to go around, different projects and this sort of thing. It will, as well as doing their own bit of volunteering. And so we were finding that there were sort of biggish gaps in the country where we didn't actually have a vice chairman committee member. Mm-hmm. And once you get to a certain percentage of people, of gaps rather, sort of, then you sort of start thinking, well, if nobody's going to apply, if people don't want to do it, is there a lot of point carrying on? And so Val and I did have sort of one or two conversations about that before I retired. And then I think because Val was managing then on her own, it was decided that perhaps the committee ought to disband. So, I mean, I think it served a useful purpose at the time within the organisation. But I think perhaps the time was right when it stopped.
So it came to a natural end rather than being scrapped.
Yeah, I think it did. And I think the people who were left on it understood. Mm-hmm. I don't think they sort of felt, you know, it's not right to stop it. I think they sort of agreed that perhaps the time was right. So that's how it all finished.
And so from starting in 1990 to sort of finishing in 2008, did your opinions of the organisation itself change from not really knowing anything to being really
just involved? A bit. By the time I'd finished, I felt if you cut me in half, I'd have WRVS right through my middle. So, oh yes, it's the sort of organisation that gets to you, I think. I mean, you're maybe beginning to find this with the archive, I don't know. But because I lived it for so long and was so involved and saw so many people come and go through all the changes and all the reorganisations and so on that we had, saw the divisions break up and everything, you know, get changed around. But yes, it's a strange feeling, whether it's because you're a volunteer, but I don't know that it can be, because people who are paid have said the same thing, because, like, Val was paid when she was a trainer, but she still loved the organisation and she still volunteered, not in the train, you know, she did a Meals on Wheels round, and you found so many people did other things for the organisation, and you wouldn't do that if you didn't feel anything for it. I felt a real part of it and I understood it, and I always felt it was sad in a way that it was so difficult to explain to someone who didn't know anything about it what it was, because even my friends would sort of say, well, what do you do? You know, what does the WRVS do? And it wasn't really known what a huge part they played right from 1938, really. You know, and I always thought it was a shame that we couldn't somehow get the message across better, but it wasn't for want of trying.
No. And do you know what's going on with the organisation today?
No, not really. Because I'd never been involved at a local level, and because an awful lot of local projects closed down where I am in Yorkshire, And I'd never got involved in something like the Harrogate Hospital shop or something like that. I felt that I kept up being an emergency services volunteer, yes. but I was never called out. I went and did some training once or twice for them. But it was harder to try and stay involved. And because we had the house in Norfolk, we travel there quite a lot. It's hard to give you something, a weekly commitment yes. for volunteering. I find it difficult enough fitting in my court sittings. So I never sort of volunteered for some weekly sort of thing. And the people who I knew and had kept in touch with sort of were no longer involved with WRVS. So I really sort of lost touch with everybody apart from Alice and Val, who I say I'm still very friendly with, and I hear a bit of what's going on from both of them. But Val isn't as involved now as she used to be. But of course, with Alice having the archive here, and yes. she's sort of kept in touch with more people, so I still hear a little bit, but I don't feel the same part of involvement as I did before. But as I say, time changes and you move on, and you know, there's other people who are probably very involved, and you know, and I'm involved in other things now, and that's how life goes on, isn't it? Mm-hmm. But I certainly thoroughly enjoyed all the years that I did have with them, and really have some wonderful memories.
And so, so last year we had the 75th anniversary in May.
Mm-hmm.
Were you involved with that at all?
No, I wasn't. No, I was invited to. Was that where the do at St Paul's was? Yes, I was invited to go, which was very nice. But I can't remember whether we were away or what. But I didn't go to it, so I wasn't involved.
And also, we've had another rebranding, really, which yes. is very yeah. different from the one that you had in 2004. Mm. We've gone back a little bit, but also dropped women from our name.
Mm.
Do you think that was is the right decision for the organisation?
Well, as I say, we wondered about dropping the W and decided against it. I would think maybe the shorter the initials now, RVS, I don't really know whether it's a good thing or not. I hadn't got any strong feelings about it. What I do like is the fact that you have gone back a bit.
Mm-hmm.
That was one thing about Tina. She was never prepared to look back. She didn't want to know anything about the past. She thought that the organisation should just be looking forward. And a lot of us tried to sort of say, but, you know, a lot of our organisation is the fact that it has this history, and maybe we should use that more. Mm. But she would never have any of that. I think Ruth was probably a bit better at looking backwards and perhaps trying to capitalise a bit on the past. And obviously the fact now that, you know, we're getting these newsletters and things like that, sort of taking people back a bit, is no bad thing. And it might just be something that triggers a bit more recognition with people. I think people get used to anything, you know, in the end. Like Scope. I mean, what was Scope? What did it used to be called? You can't remember, really, can you? It's just Scope now. So I'm sure the fact that we've taken the W out, it won't make a lot of difference.
And what would you say was Royal Voluntary Service's place in society today?
Oh, the voluntary. Yeah. I would say it's going to play a huge part, providing we can keep going. As I say, I have no idea now about the finances of the organisation or what, you know, how we're doing. But the fact that there are going to be so many more older people, me included, probably, who could stay in their own homes and have the help of the RVS. I'm sure it's a huge, huge thing, and I hope it can keep going and play a big part. I think it's going to be as important now as it ever was. And I think the fact that it's more focused on keeping people in their own homes, I think that was probably the right way to go, because that's what people want. So I think the fact that we went through all the agonies beforehand and disbanded a lot of the things that other organisations could probably do just as well, if not better than us, was probably a good thing. Mm-hmm. And if we can keep going and offer this help and work in partnership with other charities, which I think is what we were beginning to try to do as I was leaving, and mm-hmm. I just hope it is successful.
So you say that was also the future of Royal Voluntary Service as well, is working with older people?
Well, I think that seems to be where we've set our sort of stall out, unless it's changed recently. I think it's going to be a tremendous support to older people. And say, I'm hoping I might be able to take advantage of it one day. Not yet.
No. And so finally, to conclude, what would you say was your most treasured or memorable moment of being with WRVS?
You've asked me a similar question and I sort of struggle to answer it. I wish I'd thought, you know, had time to think about it, but I honestly don't know. Finding one moment in a space of sort of 18 years is not easy. I remember one very funny moment. I don't know whether it would be the most memorable, but I do laugh about it sometimes. It was Mark Lever and I sitting on the steps at Milton Hill outside on a lovely summer's day, and he said to me, you know, Caroline, you'd make a good trustee. And I said to him, I've about as much chance making a trustee as you have of being chief executive.
And then you were both those roles.
And then I think we went back in to finish a training course or something. But I mean, it's not a treasured memory, but it's a vivid memory that I have. And I often look back on it and think, yeah, how far we both came in the organisation. So that's one moment that I do think about.
And do you have any other moments that you sort of relive and think about?
The time, as I say, that I was given 3 gin and tonics and then agreed to sit on the finance committee, we used to laugh about that a lot, Ian Peacock and Dino, who were both on the finance committee, and me. I say, I don't know how I let myself in for this. So that's a moment that I often think about. I don't know. The Milton Hill times were really good. I think that was such a great place to be able to go, and you know, I have memories of walking around the gardens every morning before just to get some fresh air. The grounds were beautiful, and it was a lovely place to be. And I think always the friends that I made in the organisation are you know, really a really treasured time that was had.
But thank you very much for talking to me today.
You're welcome.
Contributing to our Voices of Volunteering project. Thank you.
You're welcome.